The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday. In the Israel Update with Anthony Rice, only on High FM.
Anthony Rice, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Good, thank you, Howard. How are you guys doing today?
Yeah, yes, excellent, thank you. A number of terror-related incidents have taken place overnight, including the shooting of the terrorist responsible for the attack on Sunday morning. So what are the details of the events that took place overnight?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the shootout that took place yesterday between IDF soldiers and Omar Abu Lila, who was the individual who was responsible for killing two people on Sunday morning and quite seriously injuring a third individual who we fortunately now hear has been recovering. He is an IDF soldier. He's a new immigrant from Moldova, recently came to Israel, signed up with the IDF, and by the name of Alexander Dvorsky. We understand that he is recovering from his injuries, so at least that's good news. But we do understand that IDF Special Forces were in operation yesterday after they used some special technology to locate and identify Omar Abu Lila, who was responsible for Sunday morning's attack. The Shin Bet, the IDF, and the Yamam Special Forces were involved in locating him. And during the attempt to arrest him, he began to shoot at the IDF soldiers, at which point fire was opened against him and he was shot dead in the process. Fortunately, there were no IDF soldiers injured, despite the fact that there was live fire directed towards them. And as far as the IDF is concerned, the case on this particular individual is closed, other than to say that there are still a lot of investigations going on around whether other people might not have been involved in the planning of this incident, might not have been part of the cell that he was involved with. As I said before, even though there are some speculations that this was a lone wolf attack, it clearly came from an individual who had been well trained, who had been involved in things before, who was clearly set up to carry out this attack. And so you know, the IDF continuing their investigations into that particular issue. Another incident took place near to Joseph's tomb when IDF soldiers shot two terrorists in an incident overnight. This is a place that is quite near to Nablus. Apparently, the incident took place when these soldiers actually shot at the man after the shot at these men after they had in turn shot at the soldiers from their vehicle that they were driving past near to Joseph's tomb. Both of them were in fact killed in this incident, and so once again, you know, it just shows that there's so much going on all over the place. One has to be so careful. There was a third incident that's been reported this morning of a border policeman who was injured after a Palestinian driver tried to actually ram him, drive over him at a checkpoint near to Jerusalem. We're told that the vehicle was approaching from the Palestinian side of the checkpoint coming towards the city of Jerusalem when suddenly he sped up, tried to ram this particular border policeman. Fortunately, the border policeman seems to be okay. He's being treated in hospital. But police did go after the individual and the vehicle concerned. They did find the vehicle abandoned afterwards. It apparently was a vehicle that had been stolen. But we understand that police are still chasing after the individual concerned. So quite a lot of action overnight, unfortunately. And, you know, as we go into the Purim holiday...
I was going to ask, how does this affect Purim?
Well, I don't think it affects Purim in any way, to be honest, other than the fact that people are being cautious, you know, that there is special security that's been stepped up. We've already seen parades taking place for Purim, the Adlo Yada parades taking place in towns and cities across Israel yesterday, today, even though it's a fast day today, and of course tomorrow on Purim itself, there will be parades that take place. Everybody's dressing up, everybody's out and about. The weather's been good, very, very conducive to Purim dressing up and people going around in the streets as they so like to do. Today being a fast day, of course, it's a little bit more subdued. But nonetheless, people are out and you know, certainly there is Purim in the air. And of course, you know, there is the possibility of more people being injured because people will be congregating in those parades. And so obviously the security forces are on high alert over Purim. And we hope that, you know, none of these incidents have any effect on everybody's ability to celebrate Purim as they know and as they would wish to do.
Anthony, what are you dressing up as for Purim?
That's a very good question, Howard. And the honest truth is that I haven't quite yet decided. That's something that I only have to decide upon later this evening.
What are the options?
When I will go. Well, there are a number of options. You know, there's just the kind of silly hat option, which I quite like to do. I'm not one of those guys who really invests a lot of time and effort in his Purim costume. But I did hear an interesting piece on the radio yesterday where they were talking about the postmodern man, you know, the most up-to-date, most modern man. And apparently he's a guy who sews his own Purim costume. So I'm not quite there yet, I have to say. I'm still from a slightly older generation. But there will definitely be some
gesture towards.
I think we need a commitment from Anthony. He's going to get dressed up properly.
What are you going to be dressing up as? Let's go to you first.
Actually, you know, when I was in Burma in December, I actually bought a Buddhist monk outfit especially for Purim.
Did you really?
Yes.
So I've got a problem because I go every year as Indiana Jones, and then this year, my wife threw out my Indiana Jones hat.
No,
she did. Without discussing, she just did it.
You don't need a costume to be a superhero, Howard.
Oh, thank you very, very much.
But Anthony, let's do a deal. Why don't we all dress up for Purim, send pictures to Howard, and let him tweet them out on the Chai FM account?
I think that is an awesome idea. Anthony, everybody, that's great. So will you do that, please? I've had to come up with a completely alternate outfit for Purim because my wife threw out my Indiana Jones hat. Zanati, what are you? Last year, who were you last year?
Anna Wintour.
Anna Wintour, that was superb. So what are you going to do tomorrow?
I don't know. It might come as me and like lots of blankets.
I can tell you last year.
Maybe Zanati's has stolen that Indiana Jones.
It was thrown so far away apparently.
Last year during Chol HaMoed Pesach, I was with my niece at Victoria Falls.
Yeah.
And they had one of these local dance groups busy performing.
Right.
And she went to one of the dancers and bought his costume off him on the spot for Purim. She plans at least a year in advance.
Yeah, because in Israel, she lives in Israel.
She lives in Israel.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, there it's a very, very serious business.
It's a serious business. It's a serious business.
My son is actually spending Purim on the Caprivi Strip, and he says it's a very big problem because it also happens to be Namibian Independence Day today. So he's celebrating Purim, they're celebrating Independence Day, and it's going to be hard to know who's dressed up.
What on earth is he doing on the Caprivi Strip?
Touring. Loving every minute of it. It actually is. It's,
you know, that's a word that I don't think, Anthony, you probably haven't even heard the word Caprivi Strip since the probably 1970s.
Since the border
when
war.
South Africa and Namibia and Angola were fighting each other.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Interestingly, I did have a discussion about the Caprivi Strip because, you know, it is a word that people don't necessarily use. It seems like one of those very exotic sort of things. And, you know, yeah, I agree. It's not one of those things that we hear very commonly these days. But of course, you know, there's an interesting thing going on with Purim this year. Maybe we'll talk a bit more about it tomorrow. But, you know, for us, we'll celebrate Purim tonight and tomorrow. But in Jerusalem, of course, they celebrate Shushan Purim. And they can't do it on Friday because of the Shabbat issue. So we have what's called a Purim Mishulash, which means kind of a three-day Purim, where Purim in Jerusalem is only celebrated on Sunday. After Shabbat. So we've got a very extended
I didn't think of that at all. Unhappy subject. A delegation of U.S. and South African church leaders have strongly condemned Israel during a visit. What is the source of the condemnation, Anthony?
Well, this came as a little bit of a surprise to me because I was of the impression that Christian leaders, both from America and indeed from South Africa, are quite strongly supportive of Israel. And I think that, you know, despite what's going on here at the moment with this group of Christian leaders who've come from both the U.S. and South Africa, I do still believe that there is a huge amount of support for Israel coming from the Christian community. So this seems to me a little bit strange that this group of delegation of leaders who are here in Israel at the moment, who are representative of the National Council of Churches in the United States and the South African Council of Churches in South Africa. While they've been on their trip, they've come to visit Israel and the Palestinian territories, as they said, in the hope of meeting Israeli and Palestinian citizens. And then they went on to say that Israel's draconian security measures have stoked a thick density of fear. Those are the words that they used. And they feel that silence in the face of injustice is complicity. They even went as far as talking about comparing what's going on in Israel to apartheid and to its complicit to the horror of the Holocaust. And, you know, that they really invoked some very, very strong language here indeed. Now, you know, I personally take exception to people who use Holocaust and apartheid comparisons to what's going on in Israel. I have no objection to people saying whatever is going on here is not 100% right. That I can absolutely take, and let's be very specific about what the issues are and where they come from and what the background is and what the context is. But when people use this very emotive language like apartheid and Holocaust and Nazism and things like that, then I do take exception to it, and it feels to me as if they're really trying to stoke up the hatred that they're exactly they're condemning at the same time, you know, because I think that those comparisons are wholly inappropriate and unjustified in every possible respect. So it's very unfortunate that we've got this group of church leaders who have been here and have felt that this is what they're seeing in Israel. I think that they see a very, very different Israel to the one that I see, one that's imperfect, but one that certainly doesn't justify the emotive language that they've used.
And Anthony, in just a few minutes that we have left, Tel Aviv now being named the 10th most expensive city in the world. How was that determined?
Well, this is apparently a survey that's been done by The Economist. So it's a very, very eminent publication, and one which I think a lot of people would really believe when they read the articles that are published there. This publication, this survey that was done, apparently compared the prices of something like 160 products and services in various cities around the world. It found Paris to be the most expensive city on the planet. Singapore a close second, and Hong Kong right behind it in third place. But interestingly, Tel Aviv is the 10th most expensive city in the world. And it doesn't come as much of a surprise to me, I guess, because, you know, when we talk about housing, for example, Tel Aviv is enormously expensive. And interestingly, a bottle of beer costing something like almost $3 in Tel Aviv was the fourth most expensive bottle of beer, only after New York, Zurich, and Seoul. Nice. So, you know, if you want to be a beer drinker in Tel Aviv, then you're going to have to earn a lot of money. But I think that really the things that, got to Tel Aviv were the issue of housing and the issue of some entertainment. I mean, obviously, the survey includes food and drinks and clothing and household supplies, monthly rentals, utility bills, schools, recreational facilities. All of those things are included in this particular survey. So it seems to be a survey that really has gone through all of the possible expenses that an individual might have to live there. If you're looking for very cheap places to live, apparently the cheapest place to live is Damascus in Syria. Caracas, first of all, in Venezuela, followed by Damascus in Syria.
Other cheap cities.
Other cheap cities are Tashkent in Uzbekistan, and Almaty in Kazakhstan, and Bangalore in India apparently is also one of the cheaper areas if you're looking for cheap places to live. But Tel Aviv comes out really on top of this list in 10th place, which I think was a surprise to me, because, I mean, you know, the cities that you've got in that top 10 include New York and Zurich and Seoul and Osaka and Geneva and Copenhagen and cities like that.
Yeah, the ones you'd expect, actually.
Although I'm now going to Tashkent on holiday. It's clearly a cheap place to visit.
Absolutely. And Damascus too.
Damascus,
Well, apparently Tel Aviv was actually 10th most expensive, tied with Los Angeles. So that's an interesting comparison for you.
Absolutely. Anthony Reich, this is where we leave it. You have a Purim Chag Sameach. We will chat to you tomorrow, same time, same place. It